Welcome to Coaching Culture, the podcast where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nerman, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. You're listening to episode 68, Laying a Foundation for Your Culture, with VCU rugby coach Nick Hill. He has built an exceptional culture in rugby clubs at nearly every level in multiple countries, the UK, Chile, and now at the American collegiate level. You can learn more about him at nickhillcoaching.com. And today's episode is part one of actually our two-part conversation with Nick. Okay, so I'm really, really excited to be having Coach Nick Hill, who is currently serving as the VCU rugby coach. We're really pumped to have him on the podcast today to talk about building culture. Nick, give us all a little bit of background on just kind of your coaching journey before we get started today, because that's going to be really a critical component of our conversation here today.
So I've been teaching for 17 years now and coaching for about 21 years. Been fortunate enough to kind of travel around the world with this, you know, amazing job that, you know, we do. So I've taught and coached in the UK, in Chile, and obviously more recently now in the USA, in a variety of cultures and environments at all levels. So high schools all the way down to five-year-olds, universities, the student age players, and then up into an adult club. So up to, you know, 55-year-old guys. That's, you know, a very short summary of, you know, my journey over the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, now what I love about you is that you're so intentional about what you do. You can see that if you just go to your website, nickhillcoaching.com, you know, you've got some of your philosophies outlined as far as your approach towards coaching. And obviously you've been on a very intentional journey of personal growth. You know, one of the cool things about you is that you've kind of started programs in England and Chile, and now in America, you started rugby programs in three different countries and at three different levels. And when I look at that, I'm like, okay, I'm sure there were some big differences, but they've also probably had to sit back and say, you know, these have been some similarities in the way that I've started the culture, that things that have worked well, and maybe things that I wouldn't do in any circumstance. So why don't we start right there, where you just kind of talk about that experience of starting a culture at those three places and what we can learn from the similarities in that.
Sure. The key is following basically the same principles, but you then apply them to the environment and surroundings and the players that are in front of you. I think that's the key trick here. You know, the art and the science debate that always goes on here, you know, the principles that you could argue like the science aspect to it, but the art side is actually, okay, how does this relate to these players that are in front of me, whether they are 17-year-old high school athletes where they've got the academic pressures, and they're young adults, to students that have all that freedom and all that more time, and then you've got adults that have the pressures of families or jobs and professions. So that's kind of generically the similarities and differences here, and I'll go through a few of the things that I've done and then share how I've applied them in those different settings.
Talk about what was the first thing that you think as far as principles, because I like that distinction you said there, like the science is the principles, but the art really comes down to how you apply them in that context. So what was the first thing you did when you started to build that culture, whether it be in England, Chile, or even now in America?
For me, it'd be linking to the past, so the history of the team, the school, the club. Now, obviously, some challenges here is that some places, they have no history, so you kind of need to start that history from day zero. Whereas I was fortunate in England, the high school as that, it's dated back to 1899. All the honours boards of each first team were on the wall down the main corridor of the school. So you could see the history and how traditional it was and how long it was going. So if I look at what happened in Chile, I found out the old boys club is linked to the Grange School. It's all one big community, and it was created by John Jackson, the founder of the school, back in 1928. And then more recently at VCU, I discovered basically the first rugby teams were in 1974. So it's getting the players to understand that they're part of something bigger than themselves. So again, it's applying that principle and just finding that context of the journey that the club or the team's been on. That's what I found in each of those places. And as I say, you then find pictures, if you can, old photos, old programs, old posters, whatever piece of history you can find. They can be in black and white. It kind of adds to the effect. But if you don't have any history and say you're a high school team that's just starting a team fresh, you know, just start taking photos throughout the journey and then you just build it back into things that you would do. Linked to that then is finding creating an emotional connection of these players to what they want to become part of. So at Dunstan College in the UK, it was, you know, are you ready to continue the crusade? You know, that idea of it, you know, it's long ago and we're continuing in this journey. And are you ready to make your part in the history? Because they're able to see it every day. You know, they wanted their name to be on the honours board, you know, for 2015, 2016, you know, more recent history. You know, and then with Old Boys, there was a critical turning point where they nearly got relegated. And so I kind of posed the question, kind of like making them feel guilty of where were you in this game? You know, were you in the pitch trying to, you know, fight for the team? Were you on the sideline supporting, or were you in your, you know, you're up in the mountains skiing or on the beach, you know, sunning yourself? So that's what I discovered in Chile. And then more recently is I said, how do you want to be remembered for this season? So that you can start where's your part of the journey? What legacy do you want to leave? So creating an emotional connection really binds, you know, that intrinsic motivation aspect, you know, to that part.
I love that. I think in my past experience, I've gone into places where there hasn't been a great culture or a great tradition. And so I've maybe kind of glossed over or kind of ignored that tradition or that history. And I guess really it's just trying to find out and point out the good things and that have been in the past. And also just trying to connect to, especially like in a high school in the States, like previous or even the collegiate level, connecting with previous alumni. I know Nate and I have talked about in the podcast before about, you know, bringing in alumni to speak to our players and share their experiences and what it was like to play in this program and how that's impacted and helped them to become the person they are today. So I love that.
Yeah, definitely. And then it empowers the pride within everyone within the community, you know, and pride in the jersey and representing the school, you know. So like the next kind of principle then is you kind of linking all this together and kind of creating a motivational video, whether using photos, videos that you have of recent seasons or back in the past. And then you link it to whatever motivational music that's right for that type of age of player, the country you're in, what message you want to sell. So it's, you know, that's quite an art aspect there of actually finding the right music to back up the photos and the images you want to share. Then actually, again, it just empowers that emotional connection and gets that pride linked together. So I would, you know, create a video, you know, it varies, depends on the situation, anything from 5 minutes to 15 minutes. It's just, as I say, it depends on what message you want to sell. And from that then, you know, the players then discuss what they want to achieve. You know, it's kind of the last question you have in the video is, okay, how do you want me remembered? You know, what do you want to do this season? And you just let them discuss. In the past, I would just literally press play on the video. I'd walk out the room and then you just earwig behind, you know, outside the door and hear who's talking, what they're saying. With older players, just leave them to it. You know, they're mature enough to discuss within their own groups what they want to achieve. Give them 10 to 15 minutes. And then I'd come back and I'd ask them questions, you know, how are you going to achieve these goals? You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to sacrifice? So again, what's it going to, it's all well and good saying we want to be this, that and the other and achieve this season. But more importantly, it's the process of what are you going to sacrifice? What's going to lead to these achieving these goals? And obviously the hardest thing here is, you know, in a high school, you've got them, you've got a captive audience, you see them every day, you've got set timetable when you're going to have practice, you know, before school, after school, or in the timetable. You know, in the college setting, and they've got all their lectures, they've got their homeworks, they've got their, you know, they've got their internships, you know, guys have a second job to fund their college. So, you know, where's the time of what time can they commit to achieving these goals? And obviously then if you're in an adult club, it's, you know, they've got pressure of family, you know, looking after their kids and being the husband, or, you know, the students, again, they're studying, they're trying to get their degrees, they're trying to, so it's, again, it's very contextualized to the environment of actually what will it then take for the process. So you have to be sensitive to people's time, because it's precious and they've got lots of other things to do, you know. And in my context, you know, rugby is not their life, you know, it's not their profession. You know, they're not going to earn their big salary from this. So that's a really, really big challenge.
Nick, I love how you're giving us a systematic type process to really lay the foundation for our culture, you know, starting with just kind of creating that link to the past and then to start to establish that emotional connection to something bigger than themselves. Then, you know, kind of following that with an activity like, you know, creating this motivational type video to really cement that in place, right? Following that up, that video, with some small group discussions around how they want to be remembered, what do they want to achieve that year, and what they're willing to do to achieve that goal and to create that experience. So what's the next step after we've done that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's the kind of almost like the last step in this process of the team setting their standards and expectations, which you could argue is like behaviors, rules, or whatever phrase you want to use in your context. And basically break it down into what they do in training, in and around training, what they do in and around match day, and then off the field. Basically, you get players break off into small groups where, again, you have leaders, a couple of leaders in each of those groups. Depending on the size of your squad, you might have two of each of the areas, you know, it just depends on the breakdown you have. And then basically give them 10 to 15 minutes where they, you know, discuss, and they kind of create like some form of list or something. You know, you give them a big chart with a pen and they write away or they just talk. But the key aspect here then is a member of each of those groups then presents back their kind of findings, their thoughts to the whole group, so everyone hears them. And quite importantly as well, you then give an opportunity for other players from the other groups to maybe discuss points or disagree, agree, or even add anything. But the last bit is, you know, is everyone happy with this now? You know, if not, then speak right now. And then you kind of then sign that section off.
How do you take and compile all that? Because you're going to get a lot of different suggestions. Most of them probably good. Right, some of them even great that you wouldn't even come up with around these standards of behavior, you know. But how do you get them to really compile this into a formal document, or just so it's clear to them when they sign off on that?
It definitely is. If there's anything that's still undecided, you'd facilitate questioning to make you clarify that understanding. And if there's not kind of total agreement, then it kind of doesn't go to the next stage. You kind of need that total buy-in, that total agreement, because otherwise down the line, again, it's, you know, what do I do in this situation? If you haven't got it almost in like black and white, then, you know, people do different things, which may go against the direction you want to go. And then in the three environments I've been in, you know, to apply it to the context, you know, say you're in a high school, it's, you know, how are you going to, your standards within your class and around school, walking through the corridors and things. In the adult club, it's, you know, in that community, you know, your role models for brothers, sisters, cousins and things like that. And then in the context at college, you know, how are you going to behave around campus? You know, because you're going to be wearing your T-shirt that says, you know, I'm part of this team. How are you representing that team around campus? And then, you know, in the college setting as well, you know, having a rugby house where you're going into someone's private house, but at the same time, it's kind of been, you know, that's the way we go to socialize. So, you know, it's quite important that it's this, again, it's that principle, but apply it to the different settings. And you can then, it's then create some form of artifact. You know, I quite like to create this document in Word or Publisher that collates their goals and their ambitions, and then on the other side of it is those standards and expectations, and then laminate it and then give it to each player, and then they can use that document however they want. You know, you're not forcing it upon them, you're just providing them with it, and it's up to them what they do with it.
No, I really like this, and I like how you kind of set the stage for this by essentially asking them how they want to be remembered, right? And so that's kind of tying into their identity. And I think this is a big part of it. And I know James Clear in his book Atomic Habits goes into this, is that, if you can reshape the identity, then you really can hold on to some habits, some behavioral change. And so here, when you're having this discussion with teams, I think it's critical that we talk about, how do you want to be perceived by others? How do you want to be remembered, right? Not just in the future, but even how do you want to be perceived today when you guys are walking around campus, look at you guys with, or you girls with this, like, man, I would love to be a part of that. Or that's something special there. They're a special group of people. They care about each other there.
Well, one of the things I'm curious about when you talk about learning the context, and you've done this obviously in extreme situations where you're in a, as you said, in a foreign language, in a different culture with all kinds of different expectations that you don't necessarily even understand when you first walk in the door. What's the process of that like for you when you're trying to learn and understand the context? Is it through relationships? Is it just, letting things be for a little bit and kind of figuring it out? In fact, I was just reading a book about the Golden State Warriors when Lacoob took over as their new owner. This was probably 6 or 8 years ago, and his first rule was 6 months, no changes, just to see and understand, what the context was that he was walking into before he started to, work on the culture and that sort of thing. But what's your approach to that?
Definitely, it's a great point because, in, for example, when I was at Dunstan, I took, 1 to 4 years to kind of really work all this out. Going over to Chile, I took 1 or 2 years again to figure things out. And obviously, with VCU, you had a less time, but again, it's don't change too much too soon is a great point to make here. And, I pick up the point from, Stephen Covey of seek first to understand before you're understood. So in essence, it's doing lots of research, taking your time. You talked about building relationships. I think that's the most crucial factor here, probably, because in that first few moments of interaction, you could actually lose them forever, So this is, again, it's another sensitive point. So it's definitely building relationships. It's getting to know the players as people first, and then players second. It's building relationships with the stakeholders. Again, whatever context that is, it's different. So, like in a school setting, it's the principal. In a club, it's the board of directors and things. So, definitely, relationship building is the number one process, I would say here. So, it's lots of research, it's fact finding, it's finding out photos, videos, as I said before. So that's definitely the start of this process of getting to know people, getting to know the environment, finding out why players play the sport, why do they want to play sport, and then linked to, obviously, we're in a kind of a team sport setting here. It's, why do they want to play on this team? So again, it's getting to know them as people, and then that then shapes where you're going to take this forward. Because if you're not meeting their needs, then you've lost them again down this journey.
So that's the end of our first part of our conversation with Nick. And one of my first big takeaways was linking to the past, right? Trying to, within our club, within our program, within our team, connect towards some of the history. And it's really tapping into that third intrinsic motivator, which is being a part of something bigger than yourself, right? That Daniel Pink goes into in his book Drive, right? That is a real driver of intrinsic motivation, is that when people know they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And this is something I've really never ever been intentional about or thought about. And so I found it really fascinating and really appreciated his thoughts and kind of his methodology and his process for getting our team to connect with their past.
But I think what's cool about the way that he did that is he leveraged that into tying it to a legacy, from that particular institution. And I think when you start to see how teams that have gone before you are remembered, it gives a lot more credibility to the question to your current players of how do you want to be remembered? And when you approach that, I think you can do it in different ways. When I started at Linmar last year, I didn't really have any roots in this new community that I was coaching in. And so, over the course of the last year and a half or so, some of the connections that we've made are actually more with players that have played for me in the past at other schools that I've been at.
and trying to get them to relate some of their basketball experiences when they look back at their career, whether it was at Springville or the Wise Muscatine or whatever it was before, and trying to get our current kids to understand that, like, the impact that the experience that they created for each other, whether it was currently at Linmar or at one of these other schools, and how that stayed with them. So just as an example, a couple of weeks ago, I had a player that played for me at my first school probably 10 years ago. She works at a bank now, and she's, you know, in real life, she's an adult. And so she came in to one of our road games and came and spoke to our team afterwards. And just coming into the locker room, you know, we asked her, what do you miss most about your basketball experience? And the first thing that she said was, I just miss this. I just miss being in the locker room with my friends and going to practice with people I really like spending time with and everybody working toward a common goal. And you could just see the sort of the nostalgia and the way that she described that really emphasized to our players, like, what you're experiencing now is really special. And you don't want to take that for granted, right? And the other question that we asked was how do you think that your basketball experience has impacted who you are today, 10 years later, and even what you're doing now in your professional life? And it was awesome because she said, you know, my coworkers have called me one of the best teammates in the office. And they say that I'm patient and I'm really good with people. And a lot of that I attribute back to the experience that I had playing on teams and playing basketball, because it taught me how to interact with people that are different from me and how to pursue a common goal. And, you know, she kind of went on with that. And again, whether our kids had any connection with that or she had no connection to Linmar whatsoever, she's still describing a legacy in the same context of what we're trying to teach our kids, which is we're trying to create this great experience playing basketball that's not only going to be special for you today, but that's going to have an impact on you tomorrow.
And I know this is probably not your main intent at that, or you didn't even think about this, but you're kind of creating a legacy of what it is to play for Nate Sanderson. And I think as time goes on, people will start to associate, if you want to become a real great coach, like if you go play for Coach K, or if you go play for Coach Pop, like, you know what you're going to get there. But it's creating our own legacy as a coach so that people know when they come into our program, they're going to get that experience.
Well, and that brings me back to the interview that you did quite a while ago with Jordan Patterson, when she talked about playing at, you know, softball at Alabama for Coach Murphy, and had that line of, you can't play for Coach Murphy and Alabama softball without becoming a better person, you know. And I think that you start to see that in your own legacy as a coach when some of your former players come back and talk about the experience and the impact that that's had on their lives.
Absolutely. Now, the second big thing I took from our conversation with Nick was that learning and understanding your context. And so I remember, just to reflect back again on my time at Tennessee, I was really bad at connecting history, and I was also really bad at coming in and understanding my context. And I think we do need to come in with a vision. Like, I do think we need to have an idea of what we're trying to create, especially, like, you know, what I had done in Ireland, I was very, very proud of. I was very, very proud of what I was able to create there. And I think that that's great to go and try to recreate that in the new context. But I think we also need to be able to meet people where they are at. And so I was recently on Twitter, someone had asked me and a few other coaches, what will be the one piece of advice you would give to a new coach or a coach starting to create a new program? And my one piece of advice that I offered was just ask a lot of questions. Like, that's the first thing. And ask questions to really understand and connect with them as people. And then ask questions to help them understand what they want about that experience. You're trying to just come in there and ask a lot of questions so you can meet them where they're at. I think that's a critical component of learning our context before we start to try to instill in subtle ways and sometimes in more direct ways our vision for the program.
Well, I think that's great, JP. You know, and I think we made a lot of mistakes when we started at Linmar last year, that there would be things that I would do differently, you know, having been in the community and having been in the context of that school for a year now. But one of the things I think we did do well is exactly what you're talking about here, is really asking good questions. And, you know, this may be another episode that you and I have a little bit longer conversation about next year sometime. But when we took the job in June of last year, the best advice that I got from one of my mentors is meet with your seniors individually and just get to know them. And so we had 9 seniors at the time that were on the roster. And so the assistant coach that came with me from Springville, we scheduled kind of interviews, senior interviews, over the course of that summer, where we sat down with them for about an hour each and just asked a whole bunch of questions to get to know them. And it wasn't necessarily trying to drive them toward of our vision or our values or anything like that. We just wanted to get to know them as people. What did they want out of their senior year? What if they could change anything, you know, that's happened in the past? Would they want to be different for their final year of basketball? And so I think that was a really important first step for us to just establish some credibility, to get to know those kids as people before they were basketball players, if that makes sense. And doing the same thing with our staff. And we had some good meetings, just, again, trying to ask good questions about where our assistants that we inherited, you know, where they came from and their timeline that got them to that point, and a little bit about the history of Lindmar girls basketball. And so I couldn't agree more with, you know, coming in and asking good questions might be the best first step that a coach could take when they're taking over a new program.
Now that's it for this episode. Next week, Nate and I are going to share the second part of our conversation with Nick Hill, and we discuss the importance of a player-centered approach to build your culture. In the meantime, learn more and connect with Coach Nick Hill by going to his website, nickhillcoaching.com. I know I got a lot of great notes also from this episode, so if you don't already, be sure to go to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe to the weekly newsletter. I send out a PDF of all the coaching notes from the podcast every week.